In today's episode, we have Felice Ayling, founder of Loud Women. She mainly works with women, but if you're a guy, then stick around because, trust me on this, there's a lot for us to learn. Take it from me. Clive, give me an intro.
Welcome back to I'd Rather Be at the Beach by Simon Jones, who runs the Bonjour Agency. If you work in an independent school, then this is the podcast for you, where we don't talk about work, but we do talk to people in the independent school sector. It's fun, it's fascinating, it's fabulous. So let's jump into it.
Felice, thank you for joining us here on I'd Rather Be at the Beach. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you, Simon. Yes, it's a real pleasure to be here and talk to you and talk to your listeners.
Well, I very much appreciate you being here. Thank you for giving up your time to be here. Tell me, what does a normal day look like for you? We're recording this on a Monday. Is any day the same as any other day, or are they all different to each other?
They really vary. It depends who I'm working with or what I'm doing. My work sort of is a balance of working one-to-one with my clients, which might be on calls. I might be looking at the work that they're doing, providing feedback. I run workshops and training sessions. I run a community of women in business in my local town of about 300 members. So we host regular events there. The rest of the time spent sort of networking and getting out and about meeting people. So yeah, really varied, really varied.
Okay, I'm really interested that you mentioned about networking and meeting people, because that's one of those things I think that probably everybody who listens to this podcast will do at some point, I was going to say in their careers, but probably at some point as part of their normal everyday working life is to meet people who they've never met before and have to connect with them. So, you know, one of the things we're going to be talking about, I presume, is confidence. But in fact, I'm just going to jump back to your LinkedIn bio for a second, because on LinkedIn, it says that you are your confidence and content guide for fearless female founders who want to rise above the noise and let loose their inner loud woman. There's so much I could ask you about this just by unpacking this. But some of the people listening to this are people who would quite possibly like to leave their job to be a founder in something themselves. More than half the people listening to this podcast are women. I think possibly all people listening to this have moments when they are lacking in confidence. That means that possibly everyone listening to this right now has something to learn from you. But tell me, in your own words, if you could, what it is that your business does. Tell me more about that.
So my business is designed, the mission behind my business is I want to help to elevate women and in their business to a place where they can grow a business that they love, use their voice to promote their business and stand out. And I'd like to create, or at least contribute to, creating more of a level playing field between men and women business owners. You mentioned that some of your listeners might, you know, be thinking about leaving and setting up their own business. They're not the only one. I think since 2020, there's been what we've called the Great Breakup, which is women, especially senior women in corporate, leaving in their droves. And I think with the pandemic and people working from home, they started to get a taste of what a work-life balance can look like. And they were not that keen to go back. And so I think in 2020, women-only businesses accounted for about 41% of all new business registrations on Companies House. And what I have now seen is the huge rise in women-owned businesses requiring a slightly different level of support. There's so much out there. There's so much advice around building a business, around sales, around marketing, and so much of it just doesn't resonate with women. They don't like it. They don't enjoy it. It's based in this very sort of male-dominated culture of hustling and getting in people's inboxes, getting in people's faces, and it's kind of a numbers game. And so many of the women I work with are ex-corporate. And what we found is that there is what we call the corporate hangover. So for a lot of women, the reasons why they left corporate was because, you know, they found that their confidence was being knocked, they weren't being taken seriously, they weren't getting the recognition that they deserved. And they come out sometimes feeling a little bit beaten down. And what happens is that this ends up sort of following through into how they're building their business. That confidence doesn't automatically come back the second they step out of that environment. The way I sort of talk about it is you can take the girl out of corporate, you can't always take the corporate out of the girl. So that sometimes needs a little bit of work to help women to see themselves in a new light and not simply as a walking CV or a collection of accomplishments, but actually that they have so much more to offer their clients and offer their business, you know, that's just inherent to who they are. So I help them to see their true value as a person, their collection of unique experiences, perspectives, opinions, and the value that other people see in them as a whole person. So not just what they're selling. So that's kind of a day-to-day. I've called the business Loud Woman because I wanted to reclaim the title, the label of Loud Woman. Most women will recognize this, that being called loud is not a compliment. It's normally reserved for women who are seen as brash or ball breakers or don't care about the people around them and are just always talking over people. It's never been a compliment. And so I decided to reclaim the term and call the business Loud Women, because I think women should be loud about how brilliant they are and should be loud about their businesses. You know, I'm not saying to my clients that they have to go out there and start screaming, but I think the idea is raising their voice and taking up the space that they deserve in order to go after the success that they really want and can achieve.
Okay, awesome summary there. Thank you for that, Felice. I imagine that a lot of the women listening to this can empathize and understand everything that you're saying there. Maybe some of the guys, maybe the guy you're talking to right now, don't have quite such a first-hand experience of that. So for the sake of the men listening to this right now, can you share with us some of the common challenges that women in the UK workplace tend to face and the kind of issues that women might face that men might not even notice?
Yeah, so this is such a big question. I'm going to do my best to answer it and provide some insights. But I think one of the things that I would like to call out is quite often we focus on what women can do differently. So we throw so much advice at women to tell them how to be more assertive, how to speak up for themselves, how to deal with mansplaining and being talked over and having people steal their ideas. And all of these different ways that women can change in order to do better at work. And I think for me, I don't believe that the issue is actually with women. I think the issue is with the system that they're operating within. And it's a system that, you know, historically has been built by men and serves men. And it doesn't actually allow for the additional sort of burdens and lifestyles that women are often leading. You know, even in today's society, when you have, you know, heterosexual relationships and both parents work, women are still expected to be the primary caretaker of children. They still do most of the unpaid labor in the home. I think research suggests that it's an extra 4 hours every day that women are doing unpaid in the home than men are. Women are still primarily the parent that leaves work to pick up the kids if they're sick, to manage doctor's appointments, to manage buying birthday presents in their lunch hour. You know, all of the things that go around raising children and raising a home, women are still dealing with that and coping with that while also working a full-time job. They're almost equivalent of doing two jobs at once. There's a quote that says that women are expected to work as if they don't have children and parent as if they don't work. So it's a constant pressure to be perfect at all jobs while actually never having enough time to do either to the level that a lot of women would like to. And I think when you throw into that the, you know, unconscious bias that we all have around how we're supposed to behave at work, what the idea of being professional is, we all have these bias. We are grown up, you know, we grow up with them. We're all conditioned to see gender as delivering different roles. And the same goes for, you know, the workplace. We'll tell women that they need to be more assertive and we'll send them on a training course. But if they're too assertive, they're called ball breakers and pushy and being insensitive. So I think sometimes for a lot of women, it does feel like it's almost impossible to be the right kind of woman, the right kind of mother, the right kind of employee. And I think with that, there is always going to be disadvantages that women face in the workplace. You know, there's stats around that show that when men become fathers, they generally experience a 6% increase in their salary. And when women become mothers, they experience a 4% decrease.
Gosh.
Yeah. So women are less likely to be promoted. There's research that shows, again, that hiring managers and managers within companies are more likely to promote men based on potential. And with women, they expect evidence. So, you know, and even look, I think, at some of the research in terms of how people hire. There was a recent study in Harvard where they gave identical CVs to people, the hiring managers in all of the different departments. The only thing they did was change the name. And the disparity in how the hiring managers rated the individual candidates was huge. How much they were willing to pay the candidates really varied. I think it was about 4,000 extra for the male candidates, even though they were exactly the same in terms of experience. So there's so much bias that we all have. And I think my message for the men is, I do appreciate that it's quite difficult for men at the moment. It must feel like they're constantly being bashed and it's all their fault. And it's poor women this, poor women that. And they're terrified of making mistakes and saying the wrong thing. But I would say to men, if you can separate yourself and your view of you being a good person with the idea that you are going to have some level of misogyny and bias because you can't live in a society that conditions people that way without having some. But it's a constant self-education. There's some really great resources out there. There's some great TED Talks. There's some great books. But I would encourage you to have conversations, open conversations with the women that you work with, and provide spaces where they can feedback honestly. And, you know, take note in meetings. You know, go into meetings and observe how they're being held. Observe who's speaking and take a critical eye on it. Because the more you can step back and observe and watch what's happening with the view of what you're looking out for, you'll probably be surprised at how much you start to see this behavior playing out of women being talked over, being interrupted, their views and ideas not being taken seriously. So provide structures that allow for that. There's some things, there's some really nice sort of game storming techniques that are out there, and these work really well for people that are a bit more introverted as well, where you provide different mechanisms for people to feed back or feed ideas in that don't always require everyone to be loud and speaking out in meetings when there's lots of competing voices. But I think educate yourself and then look out for it. But provide mechanisms for the women to feedback if there are things that they're trying to deal with. You know, flexibility is a huge one. We know that a lot of women really, you know, desire flexible working so that they can fit the responsibilities around, you know, childcare and still feel like they're doing a good job at work. So yeah, that's quite a lot. I've just given you a lot of information and a lot of statistics. But one thing I do notice as well is that there is sometimes a resistance even from women to talk about this and to acknowledge it. And it's not the same for all women. Not all women experience this. Not all women will agree with everything I'm saying. And I think for some women, they feel that this paints them almost as a victim when they don't want to, you know, they don't feel like that. So it's not about saying that, you know, women are downtrodden and poor women and we should feel sorry for them. But they are having to deal with this. They are carrying guilt. They are carrying additional burdens. And they do have a lot of pressure on them from all different sources in a way that men don't.
So amazing hearing all of this from you, Felice. You mentioned a couple of times that we all have like this inbuilt bias, I think you called it, and that we're all conditioned from our childhood, I imagine, you know, from the things that our parents tell us. And I imagine that most of the time it's not our parents intentionally wanting to condition us in a certain way. It's just the things that they say because they were brought up in a certain way. And I guess for those of us who have children, we'll be to an extent doing the same thing with our children. How do we break that cycle?
It really is just education. There's so much out there. There's so many resources out there that highlight this, that break it down, that provide evidence. And I think the more it's sort of the more you can look at, you know, the media and what we're consuming with that critical eye, the more you start to see it. You know, as soon as I started, you know, understanding how women are portrayed in the media, in films and TV, you know, these sort of very narrow, there's like four or five female characters that you'll see in every single TV show or film. And women are often reduced to these very narrow boxes. You know, how many rom-coms have you seen where the woman is a high flyer in the city, you know, and then she meets the man of her dreams and realizes that all she wants is the simple country life and to have babies. And, you know, it's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere. And I think this idea of women being high flyers without being ice queens and, you know, and ball breakers and, you know, can have a family as well as pursue a career, we don't see it anywhere near as often as we should. You know, it starts right when our kids are little. Young girls at school are often paired with young boys with behavioural issues in the hope that they will calm the boys down. You know, there was a huge, it was quite a controversial petition, I think, that was started last year from one school parent who refused to allow her child to go on a school trip because her child's experience on that trip was going to be hampered because she was paired with a boy that was known to be a troublemaker. So again, right from an early age, women are being made responsible for the behaviour of other people, whereas boys are allowed to just go and experience things the way they experience them. They're not expected to take care of somebody else in the process. So I think once we start to look at this, some really great books out there, I would definitely recommend a book called Invisible Women. It's a real eye-opener. And it's all about data bias in our society. So again, could be a good one for the boys because we know how much boys love data and numbers. So it really breaks it down in terms of how women have been excluded for years in our research and our data, in health and, you know, in health and safety. The fact that women, I think, are 40% more likely to be injured in a car accident because the safety features were built with men's bodies in mind. Huh. Women have been excluded from a lot of medical research right up until only about sort of 20 years ago because of women's hormones, because they fluctuate. So they were seen as not good test subjects for a lot of the medication that we take and a lot of the healthcare science. So they were just excluded. But of course, women's hormones and the way our bodies are processing them actively impacts how our bodies respond to medication. So women are consistently being over-medicated, doses are too strong, treatment programs don't work. So again, there's just a ton of data out there. So that's a really interesting book for everyone to read. There's actually a really good TED talk that just landed on the TED website last week, I think, or the last 2 weeks. And that is, it's a TED talk by a woman called Marianne Siegert. Hopefully I'm pronouncing her name right, on the authority gap, she calls it. And again, she talks about a lot of research and data that prove, that highlight the difference in how men and women are judged at work, both from the hiring process right through to, you know, sort of promotion and how they're spoken to in senior leadership positions. It's really interesting. As most TED Talks are, she puts it across in such an eloquent way. And she talks about this idea of an authority gap where men and women can be as equally qualified and experienced. Women will always be seen as less capable in those situations.
Okay, well, for sure, we'll put a link to that and the book you just mentioned, Invisible Women, I think you said it was called. We'll put a link to both those in the show notes for this episode.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the other part of your work, all to do with confidence, which of course is linked in with everything that we're talking about here.
Yes.
But what advice do you have for women, or for men for that matter, who may be feeling discouraged or overlooked in their work, particularly people who are working in an independent school in the UK?
So one of the things I talk about is that there's so much advice out there for women in how to build their confidence. There's superwoman pose stuff to, you know, self-care and mantras and journaling and gratitude. And again, none of these things are bad things. You know, I think it is really important for women to have outlets and to have regular time where they can check in with themselves. But I do sometimes think that it's all a little bit surface level and it's not really tackling with the reasons why women don't feel confident in the first place.
Mm.
So, like I said, most of what I teach my clients is that, A, confidence isn't consistent. Often women will say, I'm not a confident person, but actually they are in the right circumstances. Mm. You know, most of us, you know, are confident when we're arguing with our kids. Most of us are confident when, you know, we're giving a friend advice. or we're working one-on-one or teaching a junior member of staff, we're confident, we have confidence, but often it fails us or it disappears in specific situations. And often those situations are when we feel, you know, when the imposter syndrome and the negative self-doubt comes in and we feel have this feeling of not being good enough. Mm-hmm. And it's too complex to address with a, you know, sending women on a course. It really is, because often it's so ingrained. But one of the things I talk to women about is sometimes if once you can sort of blow the lid off the situation and the systems that they're working within, and they can start to see how much of this actually has nothing to do with them. Because again, I think women will take criticism, they'll see feedback or a lack of progression, and then immediately turn that inwards and say, it must be something I'm doing. And you go to, you know, to some extreme, you'll find there's a sort of a natural desire to almost change who you are, reshape yourself and reinvent yourself to be who you think other people want you to be. You think, well, if they're telling me that I should speak up or I need to be louder, I need to be more assertive. Whereas actually, even once they get there, they probably find it's still not good enough, you know, and that's actually really bad for your sort of mental health and your sense of self to constantly be trying to squeeze yourself into an idea of what somebody else thinks you should be. And again, I see this so much in my clients where they've just got so burnt out with that in corporate that they've left to, you know, to create a different environment for themselves. So I think it's acknowledging that some of it is just out of your control and learning to live with the systems and not, you know, and not require too much, not take too much of your self-validation from what others say. And also, it's so important to have a community of other women. You know, I think finding women that you can come together with, share your experience with, have women that will cheerlead you and just remind you, you know, how absolutely awesome you already are, can be such a great source of support for women. I really advocate for community. Again, not, you know, not every woman is going to be your best friend. They don't have to be. But I think, I imagine that within some of the networks and some of the institutions that there are other women doing similar jobs. So look for communities that are already established. If there isn't one, start one. When I moved to a new city a couple of years ago, there were no women-only networking events, and I really wanted to join one. So I got together with a friend and said, I just want to have a space. You know, a few women, we get together every month or a couple of times a month and, you know, just share experiences where we're at, especially other women in the same situation. You know, I could talk to my friends and my family, but none of them were building a business. So they could only empathize to a point. So having other women that were also trying to build a business and were in the same space and facing similar challenges was just a really great source of community. So we started that. We just got a group of women together. It started off with about 8 of us, you know, in a pub upstairs somewhere. And then it's grown to over 300 women.
Get out. No way.
Yeah. We just passed 300 women in the Facebook group. And this is only a local town one. It's not like it's, you know, it's across the country or anything. And then I think we have about another 60 or 70 in a WhatsApp group as well that aren't in the Facebook group. But the once it started, you know, there were so many women out there that wanted to be a part of this but didn't know how to go about it or just accepted that there wasn't one. So I would say there, for all of the women out there listening, I guarantee there are other women that are feeling the way you do, and start a community. You'd be amazed actually how many women want to join and be knocking down your door. And I think in those sessions, once you start coming together and sharing experiences, you'd be amazed how quickly women actually will start to come up with suggestions or solutions or ideas for things that they can take back to their own leadership teams and their own managers, their own bosses. But even just having a space where you can talk about what you're experiencing and hear from 20 other women that they all experience the same thing. Again, it can separate what's happening or separating behavior from you, because you say, well, if everyone's experiencing it, it can't just, you know, it can't just be me. You know, and ultimately it may not change. There may be very little that you can do. For me, I, you know, got to the point where I knew it wasn't going to change, and I was tired of trying to work within that that framework. So I left and started my own thing, and it took me a while because, like I said, you know, I had to sort of start unpeeling some of the layers that I'd built up over my time in corporate. But my level of confidence in myself, my ability, and the value I offer to my clients is dramatically increased, because I am showing up just as I am with all of my quirks and things that I think are probably embarrassing. And, you know, what I'm finding is that people really connect with that. And the things that I think are weird and embarrassing actually become other people's favorite things about me. And it gives them permission to also show up and be weird and embarrassing and accept themselves. So, you know, this concept of, you know, we're all trying to fight for a seat at the table. And I think for a lot of women, they're just saying, I'm going to build my own table, thanks. Brand new table with unlimited seats.
I love that. I love the idea of a new table. And I'm seeing, as well as you, I'm sure, I'm seeing the emergence of more and more women-only groups. And, you know, for things like the kind of thing that you're talking about. I remember hearing about Carrie Green. She created the Female Entrepreneur Association, I think it's called. She's here in the UK. And again, I'm thinking about the women in particular who might be listening to this. There's Amy Porterfield in the US. I'm sure you may well know Amy Porterfield, Felice. You know, she's a real mover and shaker in this space. Felice, we've got a new section in the podcast here. It's called Repeat After Me.
Okay.
Where I say the first half of a sentence, you then repeat that first half of the sentence and then continue into the second half. So the first one is this: the best thing about being the founder of your own business is?
The best thing about being a founder of my own business is that I don't have to live by anybody else's rules anymore.
Love that.
Genuinely, I set the tone. I set my working pattern. I set my working hours. If I take 2 hours off in the middle of the afternoon, there's nobody judging that. There's nobody commenting on that. As long as I'm doing a good job for my clients and I'm showing up in my business, yeah, I set the rules. I say what goes.
I love that. I love that, Felice. Thank you for that. I got another one here. Women who want to boost their confidence at work should.
So the women who want to boost their confidence at work should be selective about whose opinion they care about. Again, not all opinions are created equal. And so I think creating at some level of filter so that you're not swayed or impacted by every single person's opinion of you, which is going to change on a day-to-day basis. Accept that you'll make mistakes, accept that you're not always going to get it perfectly right first time, and try not to let that impact how you see yourself as a valuable and competent employee.
Can I ask you a third one? Would that be all right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So number three, repeat after me. A great approach for women who want to get ahead in life is?
A great approach for women who want to get ahead in life is to take the time to really understand you, understand your body. There is so little that women understand about how their bodies work, how their emotions work, how their hormones work. There's so little that women understand about the systems and the structures that they're working within that are actively set up to keep them down. So educate yourself on everything you can to understand how you as a person operates, but also how your body and your emotions work. There's so much evidence that suggests that women's ability to do certain tasks actually fluctuates throughout the month, because when our progesterone's high or low, we tend to be better on creative tasks or more functional tasks. And our ability to work with ourselves rather than against ourselves is going to save us from a lot of grief and, you know, beating ourselves up for not being perfectly competent and, you know, and able to move through our lives on a perfectly even keel all the time. So I think get in touch with who you are, how you work, and try and structure your life in a way that really fits with that rather than fits with what everybody tells you you're supposed to be doing, what it's supposed to look like.
awesome answers there. Thank you so much for addressing that. It's interesting that clearly there are so many different things that you could pull upon there. There are so many things you could talk about. So it must be very hard for you to choose just one of those and to talk to us about them. I'm sure that people who are listening to this right now would love to find out a bit more about you and how they can get in touch with you, but also how they could benefit from what you provide, what you offer. Tell us how you could help other people, how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, sure. So if you want to get in touch with me, I'm on primarily LinkedIn. That's where I'm most active. So just search for me by name, Felice Ayling. I'm the only one on there, so you're not gonna have to search too long. My website is loudwomen.club. So you can obviously find out more about me there and my services. But in terms of the work that I do, I work one-on-one with women, and I range from a power hour. So again, if you want just some pretty short, intensive advice, or you want to talk through a particular issue, you can book those. Or I go, you know, right up to sort of working with women, you know, for sort of 6 to 12 months to really build their business and help them to stand out. Because that's the main thing for a lot of, you know, for a lot of women when they're building their business, especially in those first couple of years. It's helping them to really stand out and make an impression. And, you know, build an audience of people that are going to want to, you know, work with them and beat down their door. Every single woman I meet is absolutely brilliant at what she does. Every single woman I meet is already the best thing that's going to happen to her clients. Every single woman I meet is also the one thing that's standing in her own way. and for me, getting past those hurdles, understanding where the judgment comes in, and helping women to feel free to express themselves and say the things that they want to say. There's a huge amount of confidence and freedom that just comes with that alone. So taking those steps and, you know, not being too afraid to go out there and, you know, share your expertise with the world, because there are always going to be people that really need to hear what you have to say. So that's really where I help my clients. You know, I don't teach them to become experts. I don't, you know, I'm not even there really to give them confidence. I'm there to help them set it free, let their brilliance loose on the world.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Felice Ayling, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a pleasure to learn from you. And I hope that the people listening to this right now have learned something from you, whether they're men or women, whether they're confident or lacking in confidence, whatever they're doing in their workplace. I'm sure that everyone has learned something from this. So thank you so much for your time.
I hope so. Thank you, Simon. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
So you've just reached the end of this episode. If you would like to have a podcast in your school for your own school marketing, then zip on over to www.thebonjouragency.com. We get your school podcast up and running, and we keep it going for consistent episodes coming out regularly. But if you don't want a podcast, then you're still welcome here at I'd Rather Be at the Beach, because we're just like a big family here. Anyway, the next episode's coming out soon, so click that option to follow or subscribe. It just means that you won't miss it. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.